I did not understand fear until the night his voice dropped, and the room went still. It was close to midnight. I remember the sound of the fridge humming behind me, and the way he stepped into the doorway, like he owned the air. I felt my chest tightened, but I kept my face straight, because I knew any shift might set him off more. He asked why I was still talking. I answered slow, careful, steady. He watched me for a long moment, then walked away like nothing happened. I slept light. When he kissed my forehead the next morning and said he was sorry, I nodded. My body softened before my mind could argue. Relief felt safer than truth. That was the first trap. I told no one. I carried the moment alone and convinced myself it was stress, a bad night, something we could fix. But fear never leaves once it gets inside you. It waits, it measures you, and it learns exactly how much you will trade to feel safe again. I remember the first time I was afraid of him, because my body remembered before my mind caught up. My shoulders went tight, my tongue felt heavy in my mouth. Air in the apartment turned thick. Nothing big had happened yet. No slamming doors, no broken dishes, just his voice changing shape in the middle of an argument that should have been small. It was close to midnight. The television was muted, blue light moving across the wall. I was in the kitchen with a glass in my hand. He stood in the doorway between the living room and the hall. He had never stood there that way before. Feet planted, hand on the frame, blocking the exit without saying that is what he was doing. He asked why I was still talking. The words were calm, but his jaw was locked. His eyes did not match his tone. That mismatch was what scared me. I had seen him annoyed before. I had seen him moody. This was different. This felt planned, cold, focused on me in a way that made my skin feel wrong. I answered slow. I chose every word, like it might trigger a trap. I heard my voice from far away. I tried to keep it level. I did not explain. I did not push. I kept repeating that I understood. I told him we could talk tomorrow when we were rested. I was not trying to be mature. I was trying to get him to step away from the doorway. He looked me up and down. His eyes stayed on my face long enough for me to feel stripped. Then he gave a short nod and moved aside. He did not apologize. He did not yell. He just walked to the bedroom, pulled off his shirt, and lay down on his side of the bed like the conversation was finished. My legs shook when I walked past the doorway. In the bathroom, I sat on the closed toilet with the fan humming above me. That was when I realized my hands were trembling so hard that water sloshed onto the floor when I tried to drink. My heartbeat sat high in my throat. I stared at my reflection. My face looked normal, calm, neutral. I hated that. I wanted proof on my skin that something had shifted. I slept in fragments. I stayed on my side of the bed on top of a sheet. Every time he turned, I froze. I listened to his breathing the way you listen for a storm outside, measuring distance, waiting to see if it is coming closer. In the morning, he woke up soft. He kissed my forehead and wrapped an arm around my waist. He said he was sorry about last night. He said he had been tired and stressed about money. He said I had caught him at a bad time. He added a small joke about how stubborn I could be. The words landed gentle. The blame folded itself into the apology so neatly that I could not separate them at first. I nodded. I did not say, "You scared me." I did not say, "Do not stand in the doorway like that again." I just said, "I understand." My body loosened. Relief hit me so hard, it felt like forgiveness. There was no discussion about how close I had felt to danger. The moment rewrote itself as a close call, not a warning. That was when I learned how quickly fear can be smoothed over if someone offers you comfort right after they cause it. Later that day, my friend called. She asked how things were. She always asked that. She had been there through the early romantic stage, the flowers, the nights out, the social media photos where everyone commented that we looked perfect. She liked him. She liked how happy I had sounded when we first started dating. I knew if I told her what happened, that picture would crack. I almost said it. The sentence sat on my tongue. Something weird happened last night. Instead, I said we were fine. I said he had just been tired from work. I made a small complaint about his moodiness and turned it into a half-joke so she would not hear the truth behind it. I could feel myself editing the story in real time. Each word cut away a piece of what had really happened until it sounded harmless. I told myself I was being fair, that I should not drag his name through the mud over one bad night. The truth was simpler. I was already protecting him. That was the first lie I told on his behalf, and I told it to someone who loved me. After that, small changes came in pieces. Nothing that looked serious on its own. He started asking who I was texting while we watched television. The question came with a light tone and a half smile. I would answer and show him my screen. He would nod and lean back. At first it felt cute, possessive in a way that I mistook for care. Then he started holding my phone a little longer. He would scroll just a bit more than made sense, just enough to read the last few messages with other people. He did not explode over what he saw. He just made small comments. Tiny needles. That friend again. You tell your business to people who do not live your life. I heard that one more than once. Each time, I felt a pinch of shame, even when I knew I had said nothing wrong. His critiques moved to my clothes. He would mention that a dress looked tight when I was heading to see friends, or his voice would go flat when I posted a photo of myself without him in the frame. He did not forbid anything. He just reacted in a way that made me feel guilty for wanting a life that did not revolve around him. So the next time, I picked a looser dress, or skipped the photo. Soon, I was adjusting myself before he could ask. His mood swung across the apartment like weather. Some nights he was affectionate and playful, other nights he was distant and sharp. I started mapping the day as soon as he walked through the door. Was his jaw tight? Were his shoulders tense? Did he drop his keys hard on the table or set them down quiet? I learned to read those details faster than I read my own feelings. When he was in a good mood, I felt relief so strong it passed for joy. We would eat together and laugh. He would send me small messages during the day that sounded sweet. I clung to those moments because they made the other nights feel like exceptions. I told myself that every relationship had tension, that real love took work. I repeated the things I had heard older women say when they tried to justify staying through rough seasons. The problem was that our rough season had no clear start or end. It was just a slow, steady tightening of rules that no one had agreed on. The doorway incident turned into a private story I held in the back of my mind. When his temper rose, I could feel myself glance there, inside my own head. It was a quiet mental check, asking if this was the same level of danger or something less. Most of the time, I decided it was less. He was not blocking exits. He was not raising his hands. So a part of me marked it as progress. He has not hit you, I told myself. You are not bruised. You are not in the hospital. No one is calling the police. It cannot be that bad if there are no marks. That was how I measured safety. Not by how I felt, but by what could be seen from the outside. I did small things to manage the edges. I kept my voice calm when he was irritable. I softened my opinions when I sensed that he disagreed with me. I rearranged plans so that he would not feel ignored. Sometimes I canceled on people and pretended I was tired, when the truth was, he had made it clear he wanted me home. He did not say, "You are not allowed to go." He said things like, "It is your choice, but you know I had a long day and I wanted to see you." The guilt did the rest. I told myself this was normal compromise. Relationships require adjustment. You learn each other. You smooth your rough edges. That is what I said when I tried to calm the small voice inside me that kept going back to that night in the kitchen. The voice that remembered how my heart had climbed into my throat and stayed there. I heard that voice less often as time passed, but it never fully disappeared. It sat in the background, waiting for evidence strong enough to prove that I was not imagining the danger. At that stage, I still believed I could manage him. I believed I could talk him down from his temper, and keep us in the zone where he was sweet and soft and loving. I believed that if I stayed alert and careful, I could keep us from crossing any line that could not be undone. After all, he had not hit me. Not yet. Money was the first thing that made the fear feel solid. It did not come as a big moment. It came through small shifts that were easy to excuse. He started coming home with stories about work being slow. He said management was cutting hours. He said the industry was rough this year. Each story ended with the same point. Things were tight. He needed time to get back on his feet. At first, I believed him. I picked up more overtime. I let my own savings stretch across bills that used to be shared. I told myself that this was what partners did when one of them hit a rough patch. I paid the light bill without asking him to transfer his half. I covered groceries. I handled small emergencies. When my balance dipped, I told myself I would rebuild once things settled. They never settled. He always had a reason his paycheck was smaller than expected. Extra deductions. A mistake on the schedule. Mixed up hours which would be fixed next cycle. He talked fast when he explained it. He sounded frustrated and helpless at the same time. I did not want to accuse him of lying, so I did not press. I just kept stepping in. Over time, the math stopped adding up. I knew what I earned. I knew what our bills were. There should have been more cushion than what I saw in my account. I told myself that I had probably overspent on small things. I blamed a rising cost of everything. I tried not to look too closely at the numbers. Looking closely would mean asking him direct questions. And by then I had learned that direct questions could tilt a day off balance. While the money was slipping, the circle around me was shrinking. He started talking about my friends in a different way. At first it was small comments. He would say they were too negative. That they did not understand what it meant to fight for a relationship. That they were single and liked to see other people miserable with them. The words were sharp but framed as concern for me. He used my past against me. You reminded me of the times I had vented to those same friends about minor arguments between us. He said they never saw his good side, that they only heard the worst parts because I called when I was upset. He said they would always be biased now. It sounded almost logical when he laid it out like that. Slowly, I stopped sharing details. I still saw my friends, but less often. When they asked how we were, I brushed it off with quick answers. We are working through things. He is stressed. I am tired. Nothing specific. I felt their eyes on me when I talked. I knew they sensed something I would not name. The distance made it easier not to get questions I did not know how to answer.
He liked it better that way.
He would make a point of being affectionate when one of them was around. Overly helpful. Charming. The contrast between what I felt in private and what they saw in public made me doubt myself. If he could be this kind in front of them, maybe I really was the one dragging negative energy into the room. That is how the thought formed in my mind, not as a full sentence, but as a creeping feeling. The first big drop hit the month our rent went up. We sat at the table with the notice between us. The increase was not huge, but it was enough to push us. I did the math out loud. I told him what my paycheck looked like. I told him what we needed from his side to make it work. He listened with a blank face, then said he would figure it out. Days passed. The due date stared at me from the calendar on the fridge. I ended up pulling most of it from my account. I left his part as a promise. I told myself that once his check cleared, he would send it to me and I would rebuild the hole in my balance. My body did not believe it. I felt the same tightness in my chest that I had felt that first night he scared me. Only now, it wore a different mask. The argument that changed everything started over something that small. You walked in late. I was already on edge because the rent was due the next morning and the transfer had not come. I asked about it. My voice was calm at first. I reminded him of the amount. I told him I had already paid the full sum from my card and needed his half to avoid overdrawing. He went still. Then he laughed like I had told a joke. He said I was always dramatic about money. He said we would be fine and that I should relax. I did not relax. I asked again. This time my tone sharpened. The words came out clipped. I had never spoken to him like that about finances.
It felt like stepping into cold water. He did not like it. His face changed quick. The humor vanished. He started pacing the small space between the cable and the sink. He raised his voice. He said he was tired of being treated like a failure. He twisted my words into accusations I had not made. I tried to bring the conversation back to numbers, but the topic had already turned into respect. He said if I did not trust him, maybe he should not be here. The sentence hung in the air. It sounded like a threat wrapped as choice. My heart pounded. I told him we could work it out. I said I just needed the rent covered because it sat in my name. I reminded him that if it went unpaid, it would hit my record, not his. The more I tried to stay on the facts, the more emotional he became. Then he did something I did not expect. He walked to the drawer where I kept the rent envelope. I had pulled the cash out earlier that day, thinking it would calm my nerves to see it in bills instead of numbers on a screen. He opened the drawer, took the envelope, and slipped it into his pocket.
I froze.
He looked me in the eye and said if I did not stop talking to him like he was a burden, he would leave. He said he would walk out with my rent money and never come back. My throat went dry. The room tilted. For a second, I could not tell if he was bluffing or serious. My survival instinct answered for me. It did not care about pride or fairness. It cared about the roof over my head. I backed down. I softened my tone. I apologized. I said I had been stressed and out of line. I told him I trusted him. I said the words he needed to hear to stay and to put the envelope back. My face burned as I spoke. Part of me watched from the outside, disgusted, as I traded my dignity for the safety of having that money in my drawer again. He made me wait. He paced the kitchen for a while with the envelope still in his pocket. He repeated how hurt he was, how unappreciated. He pointed out all the things he did that I never acknowledged. Some of them were real, some were exaggerated. I nodded through all of it. I knew what was at stake. Finally, he pulled the envelope out and tossed it onto the table. He said this was exactly why he did not like to talk about money with me, that I turned everything into an attack. He said he could not promise how long he would stay if things kept feeling like this. Threats folded into warnings. Warnings folded into rules, none of them written down, all of them binding. My hands shook when I picked up the envelope. That night, our voices rose higher than usual. At one point, I heard a knock from the wall we shared with the neighbor. It came as three sharp taps, a pause, then another two. It was the kind of knock that carries a message. Are you all right? I went quiet. He glared at the wall and then at me, as if I had invited the sound. Later, after the argument cooled, the neighbor knocked again, this time at the door. I opened it a crack. She stood in the hallway in her robe, eyes tired but alert. She said she had heard us and wanted to make sure everything was okay. Her gaze slid past me to the inside of the apartment, trying to see him without being obvious. I felt a rush of shame, like my private life had spilled into the hall. He stepped up behind me, close enough that I could feel his breath on the side of my neck. He put on his soft voice. He thanked her for checking. He said we were fine, just stressed about bills. He wrapped an arm around my shoulders, a gesture that looked protective, but felt like a clamp. The neighbor studied my face. She asked again with her eyes. I smiled and nodded. I told her we were good. She did not look convinced, but she let it go. When I closed the door, his grip on my shoulder tightened. He waited a beat, then dropped his hand and walked away. He did not yell. He did not accuse me of anything directly. He just spent the rest of the night in cold silence. Every time I passed him, I felt the weight of that neighbor's knock. I knew he did too. The next day, he used it against me. He said I had embarrassed him. He said no one needed to be in our business. He said if I did not control my tone, people would start thinking he was some kind of monster. The word hung in the air like a dare. I rushed to reassure him. I said no one thought that, I said it had just been a loud night. What I did not say was that part of me wanted someone to notice. Part of me hoped that knock meant I was not crazy. That someone outside could hear the danger I kept trying to downplay. That someone might remember if I ever needed help. I did not let that part speak. Instead, I pulled further away from the neighbor. I kept my voice lower in the apartment. I stopped playing music when he was in a bad mood, because any sound felt like a risk. The walls closed in. My world shrank to the size of his reactions, his income, his moods. Everything else became background. I told myself I was staying because leaving would be reckless without a plan. I told myself that once his money stabilized, things would calm down. That this was pressure from the outside, not rot on the inside. That if I could just get us through a few more months, he would switch back to the man I met, the one who made me feel chosen instead of cornered. I believed that story until the day I opened my banking app and saw that the missing money was not a mistake or a rough patch. It was him. I found out by accident. It was early morning. He was still asleep beside me. I opened my banking app to check my balance before paying a bill. My chest tightened as soon as the numbers loaded. I blinked hard, thinking I had typed the wrong password and landed in some old account. But the number stayed the same. Lower than it should have been. Lower than I could explain. I scrolled through the transactions line by line. Small withdrawals at first. Spread out over weeks. Nothing big enough to drag immediate attention. Then the pattern sharpened. Pools that matched days he said he was out running errands. Pools that matched nights he came home acting tense but said nothing was wrong. One transfer in particular made my stomach flip. It was labeled as an ATM withdrawal at a gas station near his job. A place I never went. I knew it was him before I had the courage to admit it. My hands went cold. My thumb hovered over the screen, trapped between shock and clarity. Part of me still searched for another answer. A bank error. Fraud. Anything but the truth sitting right in front of me. Too consistent. Too familiar. He had been pulling money out of my account while telling me his income was thin, while asking me to cover more bills, while watching me stress over every due date. Something inside me cracked, in a quiet, final way. I did not confront him right then. I closed the app and walked to the bathroom. I splashed water on my face and stared at myself in the mirror. My reflection looked the same. But something felt stripped away. I could not pretend anymore. Not about his stress. Not about our teamwork. Not about his promises. The financial tightness was not pressure from outside. It was him taking from me behind my back. When I walked out, he was awake. He stretched and asked if I wanted coffee. His voice was warm, light, carefree. As if we lived in a home built on trust instead of threats and missing dollars. I watched him move. He hummed while he rinsed the mug. The ease in his body made me feel sick. He had stolen from me and slept peacefully through the night. I felt fear rise in me in a new shape. Not sharp like the doorway night. This one was heavy. It settled low in my chest. It told me that he did not see me as a partner. He saw me as a resource. Something to draw from. Something he could control. Something that would not leave. That thought was the first time I allowed myself to consider the real danger. Later that day, the threat came. He got upset over something small. A dish left in the sink. A towel on the bed. It did not matter. His tone dropped. His shoulders tightened. He moved closer. Step by step. And I felt the old fear return. But sharper now because of what I knew he was capable of. He said I needed to watch how I talked to him. Then he said a sentence that iced my spine. He told me he could make things very hard for me if he wanted to. There was no misunderstanding that line, no way to soften it. He was not talking about arguments. He was not talking about bills. His face told me exactly what kind of power he thought he had over me. I held still. I waited for his mood to shift. I waited for the threat to lose its edge. When he finally walked away, my legs felt numb, I knew that if I stayed, the next line he crossed would not be financial. It would be physical. Fear no longer disguised itself as doubt. It stood clear in front of me. That night, I reached for my phone and tagged a message to the friend I had pushed away. I erased it twice. The words felt heavy, embarrassing, like admitting failure. But the silence in the apartment made my heart beat too loud. I typed again, slower this time. I need to talk to you. Please do not ask questions yet. She responded within minutes. She said she was there. She asked if I was safe. That question alone almost broke me. No one had asked me that in months. Not directly. Not with that level of concern. I stared at the screen before typing back. Not really. She called. I stepped outside to answer, so he would not hear me. My voice shook when I tried to explain. I told her about the money. I told her about the threat. I told her about the months of tension I had kept hidden. At first, the words came slow. Then they rushed out. She listened without interrupting. When I finished, there was a long silence on the line. Then she told me I needed to leave. Hearing it out loud made everything real. It felt like a door opening and a cliff appearing at the same time. I told her I did not know where to go. I told her I was scared he would come after me. She said I could come to her place, but I knew he would look there first. I needed time. I needed space. I needed to think in quiet. I decided to leave when he fell asleep. I did not pack much. A few clothes, important documents, my charger. I moved through the room slow and silent, like if I breathed too loud, he would wake up and stand in the doorway again. I waited until his breathing settled into the deep, steady rhythm that meant he would not wake easily. I held my shoes in my hand as I stepped into the hall. Every sound felt amplified. The click of the door latch, the creak in the hallway floor, the hum of the elevator. My heart thudded so hard I worried someone would hear it. When I reached the parking lot, I sat in my car and locked the doors. Only then did I let myself breathe. I drove to a quiet street and parked under a dim streetlight. I turned off the engine and pulled my knees to my chest. I stayed there through the night, half awake, half numb. The fear did not fade, but it changed. It felt cleaner. It felt like something I could act on instead of something I had to swallow. For the first time in months, he was not watching me. He was not deciding the shape of my day. He was not measuring my tone or my movements. For the first time, I was alone. I did not know what came next. I did not know how to rebuild my life from this point. But I knew one thing with absolute clarity. I was alive.